to be able to recover. So anyway, hey, okay, I guess that means I need to start talking. My name is Ken. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm really grateful to be here in Long Beach, California, while you all are in places north, south, east, and west of me, primarily based in the Bay Area, which I can very well claim that as an ex-employee of a company that started out as Pacific Telephone, became Pacific Bell and AT&T, I did a fair amount of wreckage and damage and compulsive eating in San Francisco, the East Bay, and surrounding areas throughout my, I retired in 2020, 37-year career. So I know well how to get along in your cities and even in Washington, if we talk about Seattle. Why? Because I know where to find food. That has never been a problem for me. So my story needs to disclose in a general way what it was like. But before I get started, I always like to start with, so first of all, I want to start with thank Andriette. I don't see her in the room. Maybe I missed her. Hey, Andriette, there she is waving. Thank you so much for inviting me. I hope I live up to the expectation. And I really pray that whatever comes out of these lips tonight, which is driven from a higher power that I call God, that someone in this room will connect, make a connection, and I will have helped accelerate their recovery. If I've helped at least one person tonight, I've done good. And anyone after that is fat-free, sugar-free, calorie-free gravy, as far as I'm concerned. So from chapter 7 of Working with Others, I like to start this out by saying practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help where no one else can. You can secure their confidence where others fail, when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And I am very grateful to state out loud and to Ellen, who I saw last night in a meeting. Sorry if this is a repeat. I am grateful to be one of the ill amongst you. I am recovering. I don't know if the word recovered is in my vocabulary, and I don't want to get into that tonight. Everybody has their own definition. I am recovering, which means to me that on a daily basis, since I became abstinent in 2015, I'm an evolving, I'm an evolution, I'm a changing being. And it is because of 12 steps, 9 tools, and most importantly, hundreds of fellows like all of you in this room tonight, who I learn from, listen to, and who I share my experience, strength, and hope with. So where do I start at the, I guess at the very beginning? I am a first generation American. I like to say my parents were both Holocaust survivors. They met in Los Angeles. And I like to say that I'm American made with foreign components. It was a marriage that probably never should have happened. My mother loved my father loved my mother's family business. And so, you know what? I need to put this on pause. I want to qualify really quick because it's a 100-pounder meeting. My top recorded weight, 326 pounds. My lowest recorded weight, I lost 132 pounds on an outside commercial food plan that Oprah Winfrey now lovingly carries the profits in her purse. I worked for Oprah for 3 years. I joined the rooms on relapse number 2. So with OA, I am grateful to say that I have given away 28 pounds and have a life beyond my wildest imagination. So I'm somewhere in between my top recorded weight and what was my goal weight when I reached it. And I continue to have conversations with my medical professional about what will a healthy body weight be for me. I'll know when I get there. I have an idea, but really, the number on the scale does not mean as much to me as feeling comfortable in my own skin. And I have to tell you, being in recovery since 2015, the skin is feeling pretty comfortable. So I know that I've got some, that's the emotional and the spiritual coming out, right? I've got some work to do on the physical because we have a 3-pronged stool in this program, physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery. So back to the Ken story. My parents had a marriage that clearly did not work. I know my older brother was wanted. I might have been a sex as a weapon baby to keep my parents' marriage together. My younger brother who I unfortunately have to say, in memory, I miss him terribly. He passed away in 2022. Was not a child that was wanted, for sure. In fact, my father wanted him so little that when he learned my mother was pregnant, he attempted to get her to terminate the pregnancy. Little did we know that she was 7.5 months along. She hid her pregnancy, and she basically got pregnant to keep my father around. And so my younger brother was born on a nice day in May. He would have been 59 this year. And as a result of what happened on that day, he suffered his life with mild cerebral palsy, which kind of falls into the story. Middle child and older brother off on his own, younger brother diagnosed at age 2 or 3. I am now 6 or 7, and we're starting to need therapy, and all of the attention now goes away to little brother. And this is when I become the liar of liars, is when my father says to me at age 7 or 8, are you upset? Are you jealous that we are spending more time with your brother than with you? I was scared. My father was a rageaholic. He had an evil Hungarian temper. And I suffered, and we all suffered in my family with a lot of verbal abuse. And so what did I do? I did the right thing and I lied. And then somewhere along the way, I found sugar. And how do I know I found sugar? I just did the numbers. Sugar is probably the longest relationship that I've had in my life. It spans a career of about 49 years. Being addicted to sugar. I clearly can tell you one story how I know I am clearly a sugar addict. And that was at my brother's bar mitzvah in 1969. I was 9 years old, and there was so much food. They had dessert before dessert at the party, which was this gigantic table that had tons of baked goods and fruit so you could feel healthy, and fruit glazed stuff, and et cetera. So the cake never got eaten. And there was upwards of 250, 300 people at this party. So it was a pretty big cake. And it came home to the family freezer, which was located in the dungeon of the house. We had a basement in our house, unusual for Southern California. And there was a freezer with a lock. And my father put the cake in the freezer, and it was on lockdown. Well, who would you think of the three boys found a way to get into the room, pick the lock, and eat away at the cake little by little? That would be me, your friend Ken, compulsive overeater. And not only did I do great at chipping away at the cake, I got even better scores at lying about it. Because what do addicts do? We feed on our disease, and we are liars. We are isolators. Why don't I say we? I don't want to bring you into my disease. I'll tell you the symptoms of my disease. You may connect with them. I am a liar. I am a negotiator. I am a manipulator. And I definitely will want my way, and I will hide the truth at any cost, right? So I know clearly that my career, if it wasn't solidified before then, somewhere around July, August, 1969, it was very clear. And it became clear to me as I did my work that I was a sugar addict. And weight was a problem for my mother, my older brother, and myself. At around that same time, I was probably one of the first kids to go to a Weight Watchers meeting, but we went to every method of desperation to lose weight. And that included being driven before school to a diet clinic in Cerritos, if you know Southern California, just north of us. The doctor's name was Dr. Hunt. I'm sure he's dead by now because it was so long ago. It was over 50 years ago, so I can talk about it. I can say his name out loud. And that diet that we tried included a 500-calorie diet, a shot of HCG every day, and I was taking diet pills at age 9. I was the speediest little fourth grader in the Long Beach Unified School District. And so did we lose weight? Yes. Was it permanent? No. So there were acts of desperation throughout my life. I hit diet pills again in high school and in college. Yellow Jackets and Black Beauties. Black Beauties contributed to me missing my first semester of college because I was working. This is probably a good story to tell. I was over 300 pounds. And here in Long Beach area, there was the hierarchy of jobs after high school. If you were blonde and beautiful, like everyone in Belmont Shore, there was a cookie store at the Marina Pacifica shopping mall that only hired Aryan youth. I was not that person, okay? Never surfed, never touched a surfboard, hate the beach, okay? And I was not blonde and blue. Next tier, Disneyland. in 1978, you could still discriminate and not have to hire people that didn't look exactly the way you wanted them to look for your job. Well, guess what? They were not hiring fat people at Disneyland in 1978. So I wound up getting a job at Tier B, and that was at Knott's Berry Farm. And on that day, my hire day, they had the shirt to fit me in wardrobe, but I had to go across the street to the Buena Park Mall to the Fat Man store to get the jeans to go with my outfit. And during that summer, my pediatrician, who had given me the yellow jackets, in an act of desperation, I was well over 18, went back to the pediatrician, wrote me that prescription for Black Beauties. That was the summer of discontent. I was working really odd hours in the admissions department. The men were required to either open or close. So I was either an hour and a half before opening or an hour and a half after. I am taking Black Beauties. I'm not eating. I'm not sleeping. And I'm partying like it's 1999, even though it was 1978. So not eating well, not sleeping well, not taking good care of myself. By the end of summer of 78, I contracted mononucleosis and missed my first semester of college. Thank you, drugs, act of desperation to lose weight. Did I lose weight? Yes. Was it healthy, insane? No. Now, let's fast forward and kind of talk about this program. The fact, I believe I went to the Gay and Lesbian Center here in Long Beach, somewhere in the 80s, and sat down in a meeting. And I thought, this is going to be really cool. I'm going to give it a shot. You're going to give me a diet. I'm going to come back next week. You're going to weigh me and I'll have some success. Well, I could not connect with what was going on in that room whatsoever. You were talking about things that were I was so far removed from. I couldn't identify a feeling if it smacked me in the face. And all the other things that were happening in that room, I could not connect with. So I went to one meeting and I never returned. Well, I returned eventually, right? I did reach the goal weight with the W. I lost the 132. And I thought the way to keep my weight off would be to go to work for the W. So I'm an ex-employee of the W. I worked for the W for 3 years. It was a really cool part-time job with my full-time job at Pacific Bell. Right. So here I am leading people, telling them what to do. And I was having difficulty doing it myself. How do I know this? Imagine you had to weigh in every month in front of your boss to keep your job. Well, that's what you have to do or had to do at the time for the W. I don't know what it's like today. So once a month at staff meeting, if you're not familiar with what sanity and insanity sounds like, okay, I'm about to deliver a little bit of Ken's version of insanity. On weigh-in day, I would be at the gym. I would take 2 aerobics classes and sit in the steam room to make sure that I sweat out enough water so that when I hit the scale, I would be within the 5-pound range that I needed to be. And to doubly make sure of that, I wore the same clothes every month. Makes sense, right? Your body may change, but the clothes always wear the same. So that was the kind of the insanity. And it worked for 3 years. I quit and I got a parting gift of a relapse. That was their parting gift to me. That was my first relapse. And I dieted down, almost got back to a goal weight, and then I relapsed again. Now, let's fast forward, because in the interest of time, and how am I doing, by the way, Jonathan?
You're at 13 and a half minutes.
Okay, I'm going to probably go 12 to 25. Yeah. Because we're just starting to warm up here. You know, I should have said I'm born Jewish. It takes me 25 minutes just to say good morning and hello. Right. Having said that, let's talk a little bit about this program, because I think that's what's important. And that's what you showed up to hear, because I had a bunch of dieting failures. And how did I get here? I honestly don't know. But it involved being handed a 60-day notice. I had a brilliant career with AT&T, documented in my field, got every sales award possible, but there was something called geographical downsizing. And I got geographically downsized and handed a letter saying, your job no longer exists in Orange County. You can't go find another job unless we have no more work for you here. You have 60 days to search for a job or goodbye, cherry pie, take your severance and leave us, right? And it was that time that I was broken. I know I was broken emotionally and spiritually, because how do you take someone that's a high flyer? I worked for the president of consumer marketing. This did, you know, and well known in my field. it was a big blow. So my therapist had been pushing me for 19 years. Now, this is 2014 that I wandered into a room. And that night in July 2014, I don't know how I got there. It had to be divine inspiration. And I took the newcomer packet and I took it home and I read it. I read back then in 2014, we didn't have the booklet. We had an envelope with, probably 7 or 8 brochures about the program in it, right? And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it 100%. So I read every one of them cover to cover. And I kept coming back to that meeting over and over again. And I was doing something that a term you may be familiar with called white knuckling. I was white knuckling it, right? I didn't have a sponsor, but I was suiting up and showing up. And there's an old timer who we recently lost, a beloved man named Jerry. I would sit by Jerry and his wife also, who we've lost in the last year, Vivian. And Jerry turned to me one night in the meeting and said, Ken, if you're going to recover, you need to take this program seriously. Go out and get yourself a sponsor and start working the steps. Well, I did. And I didn't know what I know today. I went out to find a sponsor. My criteria was simple. She was funny. Check. She was Jewish. Check. She had worked for Weight Watchers. Check. This is my sponsor. I didn't know anything about having what I wanted or what I was supposed to do. I just said, will you sponsor me? She said, yes. Now, what I didn't do was do all the footwork that one should do when hiring a sponsor. How are you going to sponsor me? What kinds of things do you require? You know, how do you work with people? I knew nothing of this. I'm a single winner. My only exposure to recovery was a TV show called Nurse Jackie. And I thought, okay, I'm getting a sponsor like Nurse Jackie. Nurse Jackie had a sponsor that picked her up, drove her to meetings, basically did her laundry and cooked for her. I thought, I'm getting a personal assistant. Then they're called a sponsor in this program. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? If you think that, you'll understand why that sponsor fired me, right? I got fired before I was hired for the job. It took me a while to get step one done. And when I finally did, I called her and she said, yeah, I can see you in 3 weeks to cover it. And I thought, I'm sitting in these meetings. And in these meetings, I'm hearing things like, this is a disease that will kill you. It is terminal. Get help fast. Now, I then put on the hat that says, I walk into my doctor's office and God forbid, the doctor says to me, Ken, you have a terminal disease and you're going to die immediately. Get help. I don't wait 3 weeks for a specialist appointment. I realized then that I had been snowed and ghosted and I got out of there. And I don't know. She got me out of there. I didn't get out of there. I was released, if you will. I was fired in essence. Somehow in April, now in 2015, I wound up at the 100-pounder meeting in Irvine in Orange County. And that night is pure miracle, pure magic for me. On that night, I walked into the room. Three things happened. Number one, the speaker that night was a man who tried to date me 30 years before that I hadn't seen in about 10 years. He lived in the far end of the San Fernando Valley. I live in Long Beach. He's speaking. I didn't even know he was in program. And here he is in OA. And he just sold his house and he's moving to Florida the following week. Miracle number two, I sit down to next to a man who befriends me. And miracle number three, the following day, I called said man, asked him to be my sponsor. I asked him to be my sponsor that night, actually. And the next day I became abstinent and start working the steps. Now, this is I say this all the time. That man is the man that I give it up to, my heart, my soul, my might to. And I can say his name is Chris, my first sponsor. I love that man immensely. Throughout my life, and my father was in business. I grew up privileged. I'm not embarrassed to say that. Food was plentiful and my father could bribe me any which way to lose weight. Nothing ever worked, okay? There was always a carrot or a stick dangled in front of me at home around my weight. And perfectionism wasn't just a thought, it was demanded, right? So here comes Chris, and this is the first person in my life that shows me something that you hear in the rooms called unconditional love. All he wanted to do was show up, help me through the steps, be my guidepost, if you will, and be my sponsor. And often those meetings that were on his day off, he would meet me on his day off and pick up the phone. We're going to meet for an hour. He'd be calling his wife an hour and a half into our meeting saying, I'm still with Ken. How grateful. I have nothing but gratitude for this man. He showed me my first taste of what unconditional love is. And so from that, it inspires me when I sponsor to do the exact same thing, to expect nothing more, to want nothing more than to support someone in the tribe through something called recovery. So I started working the steps. I became abstinent on April, that Monday. And the rest is kind of history, except for one fun fact that I'll share with you. That was in 2015. March the 1st, 2017, I was relieved of the obsession of recreational sugar. I divorced recreational sugar on March the 1st, 2017. I have not turned back. That is not God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. That is God doing for me what I wouldn't do for myself. Because part of my binge history would be to come home. I traveled in this career with AT&T for 7 years. I would leave on Sunday. I would come home on Friday. I would be at Vons on Saturday morning buying my binge foods and my weekend groceries because I didn't need much food in the house. And in Vons, in my local Vons in Long Beach, in the far corner was my drug dealer. And the drug dealer was the bakery section, and the drug dealer had a cold case, and the drug dealer sold quarter sheets of quarter sheet cakes that I could take home with me in a lovely plastic container. And what I did really well was isolate. I could tell Jonathan I had plans with Ellen and tell Ellen I had plans with Jonathan. And guess what? I had the best date of my life with a hunk of white wedding cake with buttercream frosting. That was my date night. And that's how I lived my life. I'm a compulsive overeater. Now, I should probably say, I didn't say this before. I believe this is just in doing my work and in visiting the rooms and hearing stories. My mother never, ever admitted that she was powerless over food. Based on what I have observed, what I see in myself, I clearly believe that my mother would have qualified for a program. I always wondered why mom didn't sit down at the table with us at dinner. One, probably because my dad probably would have pulled her hair out. But number two, she was binging all day in the kitchen and wasn't hungry. We would find wrappers, hidden food. You know, I remember the cleaning lady found a bucket of chicken and bones in the back of her car. So maybe I was divinely inspired. I don't know. The fact is, I am a compulsive overeater. I am powerless over food, step one. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I became willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God to be. That fast forwards me now into what I think will kind of wrap things up. The current sponsor that I work with is no less than a miracle. No less than a miracle. It was at the OA birthday party at that lovely LA Hilton going on 4 years ago that I see a man that prays like I do, eats like I do, and lives like I do. And that to me at the time was very, very important. I had difficulty connecting with step three for some very personal reasons. I didn't perceive my faith to be one that turns over anything. That sounded like other faiths. So there was a little bit of, that was a bit problematic for me. Well, this man, and through doing my work and working with my religious leadership and looking in our liturgy, absolutely, my faith talks about give your problems up to God. I call my higher power God. So really, really cool. And by the way, when I met him, he didn't become my sponsor immediately. We talked. He lives up, well, he doesn't live in Seattle anymore. He just moved in the last 6 months. He left Seattle. He's living in Israel, moved there with his family. But we've been together as sponsee. After I called him on the phone one day, we were chatting and just flat out, I was divinely inspired to ask him to sponsor me. And he divinely said, I'm happy to do that. Did you know I work out with a vision for you and we'll be recovering through the big book? Well, that was like, oh my God, what am I in for? Okay. To me, the big book was like, that was for alcoholics, right? We have our own literature. Well, let me just tell you something, my Bay Area and North friends, recovering in the big book has been the biggest blessing of my life, the greatest miracle. I hold this thing. If you saw, I'm going to bring it with me too. If you're coming to the OA2, R2, I'll bring it with me. I'll just show you. It's got more colors on it than a Rand McNally map. It is well marked up. I consider this document to be as sacred to me as the works of my faith.
And you have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Okay. Wow. See, I told you I could talk all 25. Damn it. So that's what it's all about. Since I only have 30 seconds, you feel free. My number is in the chat. 562-881-0710. For those of you that are listening, I'm available for text, outreach calls. I'm an available sponsor. Don't leave this room. Don't leave any room until the miracle happens. And kind of reminds me of like when I was a kid, I didn't want to get up and leave the movie, even though I had to pee really bad because I was worried I missed something. Don't leave the room to pee because the miracle is going to happen while you're out, right? Don't let that happen to you. And listen to your sponsor. Right? If you don't have a sponsor, get a sponsor. That's it for me. Thank you for letting me share.